You are tuned into Business Sense on Adventist World Radio, powered by SID Media.
My guest this evening is Tony Friday, and of course, he was our shapeshifter the other week. And no, man, I think he's made a record because he's the first shapeshifter to actually come through for part two, and he's already joining us on the line. Hi, Tony.
Hey, bro.
How are you today?
I am wonderful. I've had the most wonderful day.
Okay.
I love winter, so today I think was the first introduction of winter.
Yeah, you and I will never get along. I will never get along with you and your winter. You can stay with your winter. Eh?
I love winter. You know why I love winter?
Yeah,
so much? Because there's a lot you can do with winter, but there's not much you can do with summer. You know, with
really?
Winter, you know, you can wear warm stuff, stay in bed, sip some coffee. What do you do when it's hot?
No, you sound like honestly, you sound like you're a loner, Tony. No, you can't be sitting in bed and with a cup of coffee and tea the whole day. Like literally, that's close to depressing.
No, it's the most beautiful thing in the world.
Oh, wow.
You should try it sometime.
You know, my problem is that I stay alone, so I know.
Oh, I see. In that case, I can't help you.
You know, Tony, let me tell you the secret, ne? This the entire radio station here, from the management of this radio station, they're trying to sell me away.
Yeah. Ish. Okay.
So they're trying to organize some girl somewhere, and I'm always like, uneasy.
Okay.
Uneasy.
Is it that bad, bro? Like, what is the problem?
No, it's actually good. I'm enjoying. I'm having the time of my life. I don't know why they think I need to to be organized someone. But I told them that I go to Mozambique, the women there marry the men, and I think that's what I want. I want them to marry me.
Listen to you, bro. Like, listen. Just listen to you. Shame on you, my guy. Listen. It is not good for a man to be alone. Which part of it is not good for a man to be alone do you not understand?
I don't have a problem with that, Tony. I don't have a problem. I just have a problem with, I want to be married. I want to be the one who's asked out, and then they pay global. So in Mozambique and Cape Verde, apparently that's what they do. Plus in Cape Verde, there are less
so
men.
It's the women that make.
Yay, Cape Verde has got some nice.
I think you and I need to take a holiday.
Definitely. Yes, Tony, you and I. We are definitely going.
But great speaking with you, brother.
No, I enjoy speaking to you.
I thoroughly enjoyed part one.
Yeah, I did. And, I did as well.
I also got some really great feedback from some of my people that were listening.
Nice.
And I'm happy and honored that you have allowed me to come to the same platform twice. You know,
you've made history of all the shapeshifters we've ever had. We've never had someone come in the second time. But there's something that I wanted to ask last time that I didn't ask.
Sure.
And that is, do you get people calling you without necessarily, you know, mentioning the other guy, Tony Tone?
Yes, you know, it's the most annoying thing for me because it's something that happens all the time. And I think you must be the, wait, let me count.
Yeah.
You must be the 1,634th person, because I've been writing it down.
That so, bad.
Yeah. Congratulations.
I made it
You've
to the
made
list.
It into the book. Yeah. But yeah, but I love the group Tony Tone.
Yeah.
They made such beautiful music.
Yes,
I'm a 90s baby. Like, I'm stuck in the 90s.
Yeah.
It's all I listen to.
Yeah.
And especially some of their earlier works.
Yes.
Ah, man. It was a different kind of soul music.
Yeah, so, definitely. Yeah. Anyways, I think where we left it off last time was just on your career, right? But I want us to, just for maybe 2 minutes or thereabouts, If you can introduce yourself once again to some of my listeners, I know that some have been saying to me, we're going to be listening, and I know they weren't listening the other time. Just a bit of, you know, the three countries you've traversed over the last couple of, what is it, 2 decades now?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, 2 decades. Going on to my 24th year on radio now.
Yeah.
So the name is Tony Friday. Zimbabwean, born and bred in Zim.
Mm.
Been on radio in Zimbabwe, Malawi, South Africa, and I'm also a huge advocate for good mental health. Mm. So I'm a mental health ambassador. Mm. I preach. Eat, live, breathe good mental health. Mm. Like, this is something that I'm very passionate about. And how this came about is I survived 2 suicide attempts back in 2011, which is what led me to do the kind of work that I do now. I love people. I love God with all my love, Jesus with all my heart. Mm. And I am where I am today because of, you know, because of Christ. If it was not for his sacrifices, if it was not for him handpicking me and say, my son, I have this work for you, I would have never been here where I am. I'm so sure I would have been dead by now.
Yeah.
But because he's got such a purpose for my life, which is why I'm still here today. Other than that, I'm also a mentor to hundreds of students.
Mm.
Through a radio academy that I started last year.
Yeah.
I teach people the art of radio communication.
Yeah.
And just how they can use their voices and stories to connect with people and all of that. So I'm really passionate about that too. I'm an entrepreneur too. I have been an entrepreneur for 4 years now.
Yeah.
I wish I had started sooner, honestly. But It took me such a long time to start, it's never too late. So it's been 4 years in business now. My business is mental health as well. So I help companies support their employees with their mental health in the workplace, because the workplace is where most people spend their life.
Yeah, yeah.
So, and it's important to make the workplace, you know, as mental health conducive as possible, because what you find at a lot of workplaces is that they are very toxic.
Yeah.
People don't feel free to talk about the issues that they're dealing with.
Yeah.
And I think that if companies can adopt a culture where it becomes okay to deal with mental health issues in the workplace, you'll have a happier workforce and a stronger workforce, and you'll have more money in your pocket as a business owner, because people will show up more.
Definitely.
And
I think a lot of corporates, I suppose managers, bosses, executives actually don't realize the importance of having mentally, I suppose, stable, if that's the right word, you'll correct me, stable employees.
Sure.
We spend like 8 hours at times to 9 hours. Sometimes people work over time to 12 hours a day at their workplace. And so
12 hours a day.
If they're not happy, they're not mentally healthy. Of course, their productivity, they'll be there, but their productivity is just not going to be.
But they're not being productive.
Exactly.
Yeah, you know? you actually mentioned something very important, because according to the world statistics, the world right now, we are moving towards losing $6 trillion dollars.
Sure.
And this is USD.
Yeah.
We are moving towards $6 trillion USD. Annually due to poor mental health in the workplace. And the biggest chunk of this money that I just mentioned is actually lost to what is called presenteeism. Is where people show up at work, but they're not being productive because they're not emotionally okay.
Yeah.
So if we can just invest in this one thing, I think we will, as a country, as a continent, we will go so far. You know, we will save so much money by just looking after people. You know, they say people don't leave companies, they leave bosses.
Yes, yes.
If there's one toxic boss, he's going to affect 12 other employees.
Yeah. A bad apple often, you know, spoils the entire bag.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's really bad. There's this thing, Tony, that came out also last year, just on mental health, it's silent quitting.
Yeah. That's also a thing. I've seen this happen with some of the people that are very close to me, where people just check out, man. Like,
Ish,
they just check
ish.
out silently, and the next thing you hear is, "Oh, by the way, so and so is not with us anymore." And
Ish, yeah.
you know,
Yeah.
the thing about suicide is, it's not a judgment on the person who has died. It's a judgment on the people
Ooh,
that
we don't look
are
at it
around
like
them.
that.
No. But think about this. If this person had the confidence, or rather they felt safe enough to open up, why wouldn't they, right? But they didn't, because they didn't feel safe enough to open up to anybody. So the judgment is on us as society. So every time you hear a stat or a news story that a person has committed suicide, it's a judgment on us as a society. Like, how horrible are we that people find death as the last resort to their issues? Like, how horrible are we, man? Like, we can't even have a simple conversation about, dude, what's going on? Are you okay? You know, people don't even feel the need to, like, we're not safe as a society. I posted on my social media today and I said, now more than ever, we need to be kind to everyone we meet, because there's so much hurt and pain amongst people that we cannot afford to be mean anymore, because we are losing people and young people. And kindness, you know, an act of kindness, my brother, is gold. Like, one act of kindness is enough to change somebody's outlook on life. Like, just walking into a supermarket and giving somebody a smile and just say, "Hey, listen, have a great day." You don't know what they're going through. You don't know what point they are at in their life, and that could be the difference between life and death.
We're very, I don't know whether we are so consumeristic or we are consumed by the world that we live in, that even people who smile at us, we often like, why are you smiling?
What do they want?
What do you want? Why are you smiling like that? And a
It's a
person
sad
could be
thing.
just smiling because maybe they just want to make your day.
Smiling for the sake of it. Yeah, yeah. And also, there's this agenda. I don't know if you've noticed it, but have you seen how all social media platforms, like, they are selling this one thing? And this one thing that they are selling is focus on self. Like, focus on me. Like, I am important.
Yeah, me,
Everything
me,
must be
me.
about me. I have to look good. Everything is about me, 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 right? And because it's all about me, no one is thinking about the next person, right? And this goes against what God intended for mankind, because God never intended for us to be focused. He wanted us to be outward focused. So happiness comes from focusing outside, not inside. Every time, I can guarantee you, whenever you find yourself complaining about your needs, your wants, my this, my that, you're going to be depressed. But the moment you start serving someone else, this is where God has hidden the happiness that we are all craving and looking for. Because every time you serve someone else, the reward to you is the peace and the joy that it brings. But this is not what the world is teaching. The world is teaching completely the opposite. Like, you know, you hear this self-help, self
Yeah,
this,
self this
self
and that.
that, self. Everything is about self, and it's a worship of self, right? So we have become our own idols. Like, I mean, just go through your timeline right now. What do you see? You see everyone is trying to show you themselves. Like, they are showing a part of themselves. Like, look at me. Look at me. Pay attention to me, right? But all of this is causing us to be more depressed. This is not making us any happier, because people are committing suicide. You've seen the stats. So when we turn the camera and we put it the other way, and we focus on when you celebrate the next person, when you elevate the next person. I saw a beautiful quote today earlier, and this guy said, "I helped somebody get to the top, and before I knew it, I also had come to the top."
Sure, that's beautiful.
So by you elevating the next person, you are also getting to the top. You know, the Bible talks about how we must love the next person as we love ourselves, right? So the focus really should never be on us. When you focus on others, God focuses on you.
Yeah, that's
It's
beautiful,
that simple.
and it's very difficult. Eh? It's easier said than done,
I know.
and all that, because,
I
like you
know.
also say, you tend to social media, you turn around, you tend to your workplace, you tend to, even in our own homes. It's almost like we are all competing. Who's going to be better than the other, more
Yep.
successful than the other? And we've got these things in
You see
the
now.
African families where, when we are sitting around as families, depends who you are, and we'll listen to who speaks the most because of, their, suppose their standing in terms of money and economic status, and the rest of you all can just shut up because, wow, what are you bringing to the table and all this sort of stuff. I want to take us back then, Tony, because I think in the last conversation we covered quite a while, a lot around your radio career. Now, I want us then to look at this, the work that you do around mental health. And you mentioned two things, the divorce and suicide. So I want us to go there. So let's start with the divorce. How was it? I don't suspect it was an easy time in your life.
It was by far the most difficult time of my life.
Yeah.
I have not gone through anything that traumatic ever since. So I got married in 2005,
Yeah.
back here in Zim.
Yeah.
And then we left Zim for Malawi. It was a very young family, so my daughter was 1 year old when we moved to Malawi. I joined a station there called Power 101.
Yeah.
I was there for 3 years. Young family, everything was great.
Yeah.
Towards the end of 2009, things were starting
Sure.
to get really bad. And
Sure.
looking back now, to be honest with you, I think we were just too young. I was 25, she was 20. We had absolutely no idea what we were doing. Nobody sat us down and they said, "This is what marriage is." There was no counseling, there was no
Sure.
preparation. And in all fairness, I was just as clueless as she was, but we were trying to make this thing work. But by 2009, we both knew that this is not going to
This is
work.
not working.
Also, because we had got married because she had fallen pregnant, not that
Yes.
we didn't love each other,
Yeah.
we did, but I think it was a little too soon
Yes,
to start a
yes.
family.
Yeah.
So, fast forward 2009, we moved to South Africa. I'm growing my radio career, and there was a time when I was in SA for almost a year, and she was back here in Zim because I was still putting out my papers and everything. I think I spoke about last year, last week, sorry. And then I think that gap then further reaffirmed the idea that, you know what,
This
things
is
were
not
not
working.
working out. So when she then rejoined me in SA beginning of to end of 2009 into 2010, the gap was so huge, man. I felt it, she felt it. We both knew that this was not going to work, right? But being a Christian couple, we tried counseling, we tried everything, but I think we were just at two completely different places. And then end of 2010, something kind of happened, which then triggered the whole separation and divorce and all of that. And I really have to say this, that the awareness that I have for mental health now is not the awareness that I had back then. I
Yes,
had no
yes.
idea what mental health was. I'd never even heard that word before. Or maybe I had, but it had no meaning in my life. So we went our separate ways. That wasn't the issue. She was living somewhere else. I was in Midrand. She was in West Rand somewhere. And oh man, I went through the worst time of my life. I must tell you this. On any given day, I struggled to sleep. I struggled to eat. I struggled to work. I struggled to have normal interactions with other human beings because I was in so much emotional pain. I was angry. I was bitter. I felt so many things all at the same time, and I didn't understand what I was feeling. I just knew that I was in a lot of pain. My work was suffering. My relationships were suffering because at some point it got so bad that I struggled to even respond to messages or take call because I was getting tired of pretending like I was okay all the time. Like the pressure to be okay was just getting so much, and the pain because I didn't know anything about therapy. I didn't know anything about mental health. I didn't even have a depression. I didn't even know it was called depression.
Sure.
So you can imagine going through all these things and you do not have labels for them. And I just knew I was not okay. The emotional pain then started to translate into the physical and became physical pain. I remember getting called into the office a couple of times because my work was really suffering, and I was, and this, at this point I was running a station, and the results were just not showing up, and I remember, and I couldn't tell this guy what was going on. Like, I didn't even know how to have that conversation. So this happened for like 3 months, from beginning of January until like March, until the emotional pain just got so bad, bro, that I thought, you know what? I don't know what to do about this pain. There's no, I don't have a name for what I'm feeling. So what do I do, right? And then I thought to myself, listen, the goal here is to make this pain stop, right? So why don't I just put an end to this life? Like, why don't I just put an end to it, you know? Because there was no medication for this. There was no, I didn't even know how to talk about it. So that's how I started playing around with the idea of taking my own life. And I toyed around with it for a long time. And I remember this one day. I was, because I wasn't driving at the time, so I used to catch public transport from Bramfontein to Park Station, then to Midrand. And I remember this one day I got mugged. And as these guys were mugging me, one of the guys had like a little knife. And a thought popped into my head, and I just wished this guy would just
stab you.
Drive this thing, stab me, and just put an end to this madness. Right? I remember thinking that. And then they took my phone. It wasn't it wasn't an expensive phone. So I just, I went home. But I felt numb. Like, I had no fear. I had no, this is how I knew that
something
I'm in a really, really bad place. One Saturday afternoon around 3, I was sharing a flat with two guys from Pakistan in Midrand, in a place called Vona Valley.
Yeah, I know it very well.
And I sat on my bed, and there was like a cabinet in my house which was full of all kinds of medication because I had been on and off sick for like 3 months. I had ulcers, I had this, I had that, I had migraine headaches, I had ice, dude, it was bad. And I remember looking at this cabinet and I said, surely if I take enough
all of them,
of these pills, there will be enough to take me out. So I sat there on my bed and I thought about my little girl, who was 5 at the time. She was now back home in Zim with granny, and I thought about her. I thought about my family. I thought about who would cry at my funeral. I saw everything. Like, I imagined it all, and I said, okay, this is it. Popped some pills. This was around 3. And I remember blacking out at some point. And around 2 a.m., I woke up to my disappointment, and no, I wasn't dead. I was still here, but I was sick. I felt so much sickness in my body, and I didn't know what to do. Now, you can imagine, you've been trying to die and you didn't die. Now you're here, you're sick. What do you do? Do you go to the hospital, or do you just wait to die again? So I didn't I waited until morning, and then I called a friend of mine. He's still in SA. His name is Elton. And I said to him, "Dude, I think I took the wrong pills yesterday. I lied." And he took me to this near clinic, and that's where he took me. And they got medication. I got some days off. But the thought of dying still
was there.
2 weeks later, on a weekend, on a Saturday, tried the same thing with more pills. But it still didn't happen, right? I got more sick, ended up in hospital again. Only this time, I then told my friend what was going on. He knew that I had just separated and divorced from my wife. So we kind of said that was the first time that I talked about that experience with another human being. And he didn't know how to help me. So he said, why don't you go see a pastor at church? So
sure.
He organized an appointment. I went to see this guy, pastor guy. And I remember weeping like a little baby in that counseling room. And I cried and I cried and I cried. And this guy was saying some very strange to me. He was saying some very strange things to me. And he would say things like, "It's okay for you to cry." And I was like, "What do you mean it's okay for me to cry? We don't cry. We are men. Remember?
Definitely.
We don't do
this. Yeah. Boys don't cry.
Boys don't cry." And I continued to go and see this guy until something really strange started to happen. Like, I started to feel some kind of weight being lifted off my shoulders. I wasn't okay. But I was getting better the more I spoke, right?
Yeah.
And this was the first time that I experienced what it felt like to go to a therapy session in 2011 in March. And this is where my passion for mental health started to.
Yeah.
So I started buying books. I started researching on this thing, like, what is mental health? How does it affect people? I came across a book by a lady called Dr. Caroline Leaf. She wrote a couple of books. She's a neuroscientist, originally born in Zimbabwe, educated in South Africa, but now practicing in the US, married to an American guy. But she's a brilliant writer. She's passionate about mental health, and she links it with the Bible. It's a very fascinating thing. So I started to get help through that, just talking about it. I started to talk about mental health to other people. Just, you know, anybody who would need to talk, I would be the guy that they come to listen and all of that. So this is where the passion then started to grow until 2017, when one of my mentors said, "I really sense that, you know, this is what you should be doing full time."
Yeah.
I said, "No, I'm a radio person."
Oh, wow.
"I'm a radio person." And I played around with the idea until about 2019.
Yeah.
2019 is when I had the courage to set up an organization, which was nonprofit initially, which then became a business. And that is the thing that I do full time now. But it's been quite a journey, man. Because, I really did. Dying was not the thing that I wanted to do, honestly speaking. I just wanted the pain to end. And this is the thing we don't understand about suicide. Suicide is not about people wanting to die. Suicide is about people wanting an escape from their pain, don't know what to do about.
Yeah.
And a lot of the times, they don't know what to do because no one else is paying attention, you know. You see someone that you know to be a jovial person, and then there's some change in behavior, and you don't even care enough to say, "Are you okay? What's wrong?" I know you to be a very jovial person, and I noticed you've been like in your corner a lot lately. What is going on? Like, people don't care about each other like that anymore. We're just so consumed with self, like me, my issues, my problems, and meanwhile the guy next door is about to die. So this is a super summarized version of what happened. There's like so many details in between.
Indeed.
So now I use radio to spread, you know, a message of you know, good mental health and hope and all of this and all of that. But all I can tell you is that most of our problems as humanity could be solved
Yeah.
if we just did the one thing that God says we must do. Just love, man. Like, just love goes such a long way. Do you know love is the thing that anchors good mental health? Think about it.
Yeah, yeah.
When you sit with someone and you listen to their issue, what are you doing? Like, you are literally showing them love, right? You're giving them time, energy, your emotions. And love is the thing that heals people, bro. Like, love is the thing that just heals. The magical effect of love is amazing. And love doesn't even have to be money. Love can just be, Tony, I'm worried about you.
Yeah.
Talk to me.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah. Sure. And particularly men, then, you know, we don't talk. Even if we might be friends. But do you find the same as well that in your work in the space, amadoda akhulumi?
No, they don't. And there's a reason for that. And the reason is, we are not given the permission to do that.
Is it by society or by
society.
Ourselves?
By society. And by the way, society is not some animal out there.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Society is you and me.
Yes, yes.
So men don't give other men permission to talk. Women don't give permission for men to talk.
Yeah.
So women are equally to blame. Men are equally to blame because we don't create an environment of safety for people to open up, right? So when I say men are not given the permission to talk, I just want to give you like an example, right? When was the last time you went to a funeral?
You must be last year.
Last year, right?
Yeah.
So just, I want you to imagine that funeral, like just remember it. Who was doing the crying?
Mostly women,
Mostly women, right? Is it that men don't feel the pain?
Yeah, it's almost like we bury it inside of us or something.
No, we don't.
Yeah.
The thing is, we do feel the emotion, but we don't have the permission to do something about it, right? So it's almost as if at a funeral, men are so detached from this thing that is going on here, right? And women have the permission to. If a woman cries in public, everybody runs and they want to know what's wrong and they shower her with all this attention. But let a man cry in public. You're ridiculed. You're called all kinds of things.
Sure,
you're weak. Sure. People start taking videos and you're like, what is wrong with him? You know? But the reason why, like biologically speaking, men and women both have tears is because this is a mechanism that God designed for both genders to use to find healing. You know, so there's a reason why men have the capacity to cry. There's a reason why women have the capacity. We are all supposed to cry, but because of the societal conditioning that we've been exposed to for so long, it's very difficult to undo this.
Yeah,
but I don't believe that it's impossible. I believe that even this conversation right now is doing something. Someone is listening to this and they are saying, oh, so you meant to tell me it's actually okay to cry as a man? You know, so these are the conversations that are changing the story.
Yeah,
you know?
Definitely.
We are planting a seed here right now, and but it's okay for you to cry, my brother. It's okay for you to say, I am not okay. I don't have all the answers to everything right now. I am clueless. I have no idea where to go from here. It's okay because. The pressure then is on us to always have it together as men, to always figure everything out, which is impossible. That is such an impossible expectation on a human being.
And definitely.
What then happens is that this pressure starts to build up, and then it gets to a point where the only way out for us is not to cry, but to just say, you know what, adios, guys, I'm out.
Yeah, I'm out. Then that's it. Sure. That's beautiful. And I think the work that you do is really, really important. And I want us to, you know, towards the end, and I know we ran out of time, for you to share those details of how, you know, people can get in touch with you.
Absolutely.
But particularly around men speaking. And I don't know how we can create some sort of platform, I suppose, even if, you know, it starts with one or two or three people listening to this conversation who will say, look, let's talk, because we really are going through different things, you know. And like you said, as men, we don't have the platform for us to have that. So I really want us to, before we end, share the details of how people can get in touch with you. I've got your number, so happy for me sitting here. I'm like, yes, let's talk about then chelete money. You know, I'm sure there's this facade that radio people have money. You know, they've got loads and bucket loads of it. So how would you characterize your relationship with money in the 20 years in broadcasting, and of course as an entrepreneur as well?
You know what, this is such a key question, man. And thanks for bringing that up, because I believe that money is definitely at the center of a lot of our problems in this age, but it's also, when used right, it's also the key and the solution to a lot of our problems. So let me explain. My relationship with money wasn't always good, because I grew up in a very poor family, and all I knew was lack, you know. So even when I started to make a bit of money, you know, my relationship with it was always, even if you make it, you're never at peace, because the next thing is there's a fear that kicks in that says, but you're going to lose it.
Yes, right?
So there's this fear that you're going to lose it, and you're going to lose it. But the way I've come to understand money now, and please hear me when I say this, I know there's people who advocate for this, especially with social media, like, you know, making your first million, blah, 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 and all of this. And there's a lot of marketing around, you know, your roadmap to the first million. Why don't you do this and make a million and blah, blah, blah. So money is great. Money is important. Right? But money is not everything.
Okay.
Right.
Okay.
Money, if I were to sum up money according to me, and I'll underline according to me, and this doesn't have to be anybody else's philosophy, right?
Yeah.
Money is a means to love people and to get work done.
Okay.
Right. So let me explain. Yeah. Right. So for me, when I have money, the first thing that comes into my mind is, how best do I utilize this resource that God has entrusted me with? Right. And by the way, I'm not perfect at this.
Yeah.
This is something I'm learning to do. Yeah. Right. Because my thinking is this, you know, nobody's born with anything. Right?
Yeah.
You're not born with, all you're born with is gifts.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And somehow these gifts, you know, if you are fortunate enough, these gifts can generate money.
Yes.
And when they do generate money, all we are, bruh, is we are stewards on this planet. Like, nobody owns nothing.
Yeah.
I don't care if it's a house or a yacht or a building or whatever, like, nobody dies with anything the same way that anyone is born with anything. Yeah. Right. So the biggest question is, how do I become the best steward to this resource that I have?
Yes.
Because it's a temporary resource. It comes and it goes.
And
right?
It goes. Yeah.
And if you use money to love people, one way or the other, that is money well spent. Have you ever noticed something about the world's biggest billionaires? Towards the end of their lives, they always donate. Give money away.
Yeah.
Why? Have you ever wondered why? Because they've realized that it's not the collecting of money or the hoarding of it which is important. You know, it gets to a point where figures become insignificant, because you have all the money in the world to do whatever you want. And to be honest with you, there's only so much you can do with money. There's only so, it gets to a point, I mean, what kind of food are you going to keep buying? There's only so much food you can buy with money. There's only so many cars you can buy with money. There's only so many clothes you can buy with money. And the more you you do these things, you first realize what Solomon kept saying. All these things are vanity, right? Because he had seen it, and he was the richest person on the planet at the time when he wrote this, right?
Yeah.
So money is a means to get things done.
Yeah.
And to love people, most importantly. So if you're a good steward of money, you will have much more of it, right?
Yeah.
And not everybody needs to be a millionaire, guys. Can we be realistic?
Yeah.
I don't need $1 million to be happy.
Yeah.
You realize that probably all I'll ever need is probably like 100K at any given point to be able to take your family on holiday, buy them gifts. And I mean, what gifts are you going to keep buying people if you had $10 million? Like, I mean, let's be realistic.
Yeah, true.
Not everybody needs to be a millionaire. So lose this pressure to make your first million, because you realize that all you have when you make that million is you have more problems.
Mm.
Because now you are worried about keeping it.
More money, more
problems.
And
more people want to kill you for it.
Yeah.
I'm going to use a very... 50 Cent said something very powerful. I'm not a big fan of his, but he said, some of the best people at living happier lives are people with less money. Most times people with less money are better at living life than people who have more money. So not everybody needs to be a millionaire. Not everybody needs to have all this money in the world. Of course, if you have evil intentions, then yes, you want to have
more
money so you can fulfill your evil desires and all these things. But realistically speaking, there's only so much you can do with money. Besides building a house and buying cars. And when you buy your second car, you quickly realize that, you know what? There's vanity in this. What is the most you're going to get from people after buying a Lamborghini? It's just a couple of, nice.
That's it. At some stage, there's no nice anymore.
Why would you spend $500,000 to get all nices? Like, all nice. And that's it. And this guy's not going to come and give you gifts to say, oh, congratulations, you've got such a nice car. No. You're stuck with maintaining it. You're stuck with all these debts and bills and whatever it is that you have to do to maintain this kind of thing. So, no, man. Like, my view of money now is that money is just a means to get things done.
Definitely.
Build the kingdom and to love people.
Definitely.
And that's it.
Yeah. Sure. We've run out of time again. We've run out of time. But can you give people your contact details, particularly for mental health? Where do they follow you or follow the company?
Yeah. So we've got an app. Ooh. It's a free app. You can get free counseling when you download this app. It's called Nani Wellness. N-A-N-I Wellness.
Okay.
Called Nani Wellness. It's available on Play Store and App Store as well.
Yeah.
It's a free app. You just sign in and then you talk to a therapist. I mean, just send them in. It's called Nani Wellness. N-A-N-I Wellness. Download it for free and reach out to a counselor. Talk to them for free wherever you are in the world. Doesn't matter. And then if you want to contact me directly on my WhatsApp or my number is actually very easy. It's +263. +263 772 108 108. So let me say that again. +263 772 108 108. That's my direct contact.
Sure, man. Thank you so much for joining us once again. I think, the biggest enemy, as always, once again, It is time. You and I should do like a podcasting that's going to last for like 2 hours or 3 hours.
Yeah, I know. Because there's so much to talk about.
Exactly. We can even simulcast. You never know, hey? And
not a bad idea at all.
Yeah, definitely.
So maybe we should think about how else we can create more stuff.
Yeah, definitely. Thank you so much, Tony. Yep. Let's chat outside of this, but really appreciate it. And thank you so much for, I suppose, being vulnerable and sharing with us your story.
Not a problem, man. It was my absolute privilege to be on this platform, and God bless.
Thank you so much. God bless you too, eh?
Cheers, man.
Bye. Cheers, bye.
You are tuned into Business Sense on Adventist World Radio, powered by SID Media.